Zazen Shin, the very precise, sharp acupuncture needle to cure the human sicknesses of greed, hate, and delusion. The acupuncture needle of Zazen to cure greed, hate, and delusion. The acupuncture needle for the Zazen done with subtle greed, hate, and delusion. Could be read either way. Acupuncture is quite something that they, especially that they discovered so long ago, and that some problem way over in this part of the body is caused by this blockage of qi over in this part of the body, and this exact little accurate spot, you put a needle right there and it releases the blockage in the subtle channels through which the qi travels. Seems to work for many centuries. So our greed, hate, and delusion might be manifesting in various ways over here somewhere, and but we can put this apply this accurate understanding of Zazen to our practice of Zazen, which may be like over here, and that kind of like pervades the whole body of experience to cure our problem over here. Thus we sometimes might wonder, does this Zazen practice apply to my daily life, like over here? Because we're doing this over here, like the Zendo is just this little area over here, this accurate little area. We can do a sesshin to kind of like very specific medicine, but hopefully it unblocks our free flowing life energy that can circulate freely through the rest of our life over here, something like that. What are you doing there? I'm thinking of what doesn't think. Thinking of not thinking. How on earth could you do that? Oh, without thought. Beyond thinking. Without thought. Yes.
You mentioned this morning about thoughts arising and thoughts not arising.
Yes.
And it made me wonder right away, if you're in a state of thoughts not arising, is that non-thinking?
Not necessarily. Dogen wants us to steer clear of the thinking. Non-thinking means just like no thoughts at all can arise. Because as I said this morning, that's almost impossible for more than a second or two that no thoughts arise. So I don't think it means that. It's something more like we're aware of the mind ground, the source of thought. We're aware of that which doesn't think, even while thoughts are arising. We're in tune with the source of thought, even while thoughts come and go. And therefore, if we're really in tune with where they come from, then we don't get so caught up in the stories. So we could also say, not truly and completely not grasping thought at all. So thoughts coming and going, but we don't grasp them. Another way to say that would be, we don't believe in our thoughts. I've said before, you know, there's this bumper sticker that you see around these days that says, don't believe everything you think. And I think Zazen would say, Dogen would say it like, don't believe anything you think. It's okay to think, but just don't. And it's okay to believe it enough to, like, you know, do what you have to do. Like, enough to, like, if they put the lunch in front of you, to think, I believe this is lunch enough to eat it. But I don't need to add more than that. I don't need to be like, and it really is lunch. This really is rice. It really exists. We don't need to go that far in order to eat it. But if we say like, there's nothing there at all, then we get hungry. So, maybe that's a question that we can explore in Zazen. What does it mean to believe thought? Because I think there's a way we can very lightly hold thought without reinforcing it in a strong way. As we know, it's like when we really start to grip the thought, I think this means that because we really believe what we're thinking is true, that's when we're caught. So it's like a thought arises and we can maybe be curious about it and notice that it's a thought and then let it go, ready for the next one. It's similar to this theme, the sixth ancestor, Huainong, talking about Zazen, said Zazen includes freedom from thought. Zazen was one way of talking about Zazen, freedom from thought, and then he defines it as freedom from a thought means having no thought in the midst of thought. No thinking in the midst of thinking. It's a little like our story today. And it sounds paradoxical, but we could say in the midst of thoughts arising and ceasing, don't really grasp them as this thought is really real. And also we're not elaborating on them with other thoughts. So right in the midst of thoughts arising and ceasing, have no thought. It's kind of a koan. Strictly speaking, maybe impossible. But what is that pointing towards? The freedom from thoughts is to right in the midst of thought, have no thought. We could say to understand that thought is no thought, right, as thought arises. Think of what doesn't think by using non-thinking. And everything is supporting us to do this work. Everything is functioning together to support our Zazen. When we were talking about this acupuncture needle of Zazen in one discussion some time ago, my Dharma brother An Bo is a doctor of Chinese medicine, and he said, there's one ancient Chinese text in which this shin, the acupuncture needle, shin, is described as a pivot around which the universe turns. So that's another take on the acupuncture needle of Zazen. It's the mind of Zazen is the pivot around which the whole universe turns. The whole universe supporting our Zazen and turning it. So, since this is such an important story of Yaoshan and non-thinking, Suzuki Roshi, I think there's maybe only this one talk Suzuki Roshi gave on this, at least elaborate talk, from Rohatsu Sesshin, 1967. He says, think the unthinkable. That was the translation they were using at the time. Think the unthinkable. Yes, this is Suzuki Roshi, the founder of San Francisco Zen Center. Think unthinkable, you know. These are these, you know, unedited transcriptions. So it's like he's actually talking. Think unthinkable, you know. Think unthinkable means think, you know. Think not about something, you know. Usually when you think about something. But thinking mind, if your thinking mind is directed in the opposite way, that is to think unthinkable. This is like this morning, talking about the direction, the attention is directed outwards, turning the light around, tracing back the radiance that in the opposite direction to the source of mind, to the source of thought, to that which doesn't think, to the mirror, awareness. If your thinking mind is directed not about something, but in the opposite way, that's the think unthinkable. Your mind is still clear, but there is no object. The sun is not shining only on the earth, you know? The earth, if the earth happens to be here, the sun will shine on our earth. Think unthinkable is your mind must be like the sun. It is shining, but it's not shining on some particular thing. It's more than thinking about something. Can you picture this? I hear this as that the sun is very much like the mirror, almost a metaphor, right? That the sun just shines on whatever is before it. And if you put an earth in front of the sun, it'll shine on it. Just like if you put an earth in front of the mirror, it'll shine, it'll reflect it clearly. But it's just shining, no matter if there's an earth there or not. So we rather than focusing on what's being shined on, like the things of the earth, we look back at the sun, the source of mind, from which all this light comes. So he says, Yao Shan says, think the unthinkable. How do you think the unthinkable? How do you think the unthinkable? This is a very interesting word. How do you think the unthinkable? The sun is not shining on some particular thing, so the sun is just the sun. It's not trying to shine on anything. It's right there, just there. But if someone happens to appear near the sun, it will shine on some object. That is, you know, how the sun shines on everything. Or how the mirror reflects anything that's put before it. So how do you think the unthinkable? He laughs. There's no way how. How is no way. Because we don't know how. You know how. You know how. So there you can put anything, you know. How. This way is how. That way is how. Always is how. This is how. This is how. He laughs. It's like a what. Cat is what? Dog is what? What is there? You ask people, but what, you know? What may be a mouse, a cat, a dog. So how or what means, what it means is very deep. How do you think the unthinkable? This is not just, you know, a question. It is a strong statement. How do you think the unthinkable? This is not an interrogative. It is strong affirmative sentence. How do you think the unthinkable? Unthinkable thinking is how. In what way do you think? That is how. That's the unthinkable. But you have no notion of thinking about anything. That's our practice. How do you think the unthinkable? Think beyond thinking and unthinking. Think beyond thinking and unthinking. Your thinking should be beyond I think or I don't think. It must be right there always. Sounds almost like Dogen. Your thinking must be beyond I think or I don't think. This little me thinking or not thinking. This non-thinking is like the sun. It's just radiating regardless of if there's an earth there or not. An earth full of thinking people or just empty space, the sun keeps shining. This is the essential art of Zazen. We sit in this way. This is how different it is, our practice. That's why we should practice Zazen, and you should not neglect our Zazen because you think something else is more important. Why something is important for you is because of this practice. So if you forget all about the practice, you lose your life. Whatever you do, it doesn't work. If you insist it works, you lose yourself. You are no more. You vanish from this world. And he laughs. He says, if you neglect this practice, your life won't work out. And even if you insist, yeah, it still works out, then you're lost. You lose yourself. You are no more and you vanish from this world. That's a bit strong. If the earth says, I don't want the sun, you're laughing, what will happen to it? If the earth says, I don't want to, I don't need the sun, I can just, you know, we have enough thinking people and computers generating information on the earth here. We don't need the sun to just shine on us. Like, it's kind of useless, actually. If the earth says, I don't want the sun, what will happen to it? There's no way to vanish from the cosmic world. Maybe it means like the whole cosmos. Because of this unthinkable thinking, we exist. We can think. We can live. Without this unthinkable, we cannot think. It changes into delusion. If you insist on it, it means you're involved in dark, big delusion. So I think he's got an interesting point. Without this unthinkable, we cannot think. Or without what doesn't think, we can't think. Without the sun, the earth will freeze solid. Without the mirror, nothing's reflected, nothing happens. So it's the source, it's the ground, that which doesn't think is the source of thinking. Without this unthinkable, or what we're translating as what doesn't think, we cannot think. Without the source of mind, there's no thought. So, that's Suzuki Roshi on Yao Shan's story of think of the unthinkable. And also he made the very important point that Dogen often uses these interrogative questions, like, what are you doing there? He turns them from an interrogative into an affirmative statement, because these words like what, how, and who in Zen language are poetic ways of saying the ineffable, the inconceivable. What? What is happening? That's correct. What is happening? Who is doing Zazen? That's correct. Who is doing zazen? So, and we didn't get into that point, and Dogen maybe didn't make it that explicit, so it's very nice. Suzuki Roshi. What are you doing there, sitting so still? And how do you think of not thinking? No answer is needed because it's already a statement. How is the way to think of not thinking? Dogen brings up this story in various places, but in his extensive record, he very briefly, they call this a Dharma Hall discourse. It was this his whole discourse. We got up to do this Dharma talk. It was like a 1 minute discourse. Or is this all that someone remembered of it? We don't know. But Dogen says, here's a story. And he tells the story of Yaoshan. Yaoshan said, non-thinking, beyond thinking. And then Dogen said, commenting on the story, the existent mind has already withered, but no mind has not yet appeared. We've talked about U and Mu, the U Shin, the existent mind has already withered. The truly existent, grasped, reified mind has withered, but no mind, complete non-existence, has not yet appeared. Some kind of middle way that's neither non-existent nor existent, and therefore thoughts can arise and cease. For if this is his commentary on beyond thinking is that the existent mind, truly existent mind, has withered away, it's gone, but no mind has not yet appeared. In the vitality of this lifetime, purity is supreme. End of talk. So that's Dogen's commentary on think of not thinking. And this is what was transmitted directly from the Buddha, thinking of what doesn't think. Dogen goes on, recently, however, some stupid illiterates say, just as the footnote here is, this stupid illiterates is literally two authors referring to this particular Chinese Song Dynasty poet, Tu Mo, and it was this phrase that this particular poet Tu was ignorant of classical precedents in his poetry. So then they had this slang phrase, oh, he's like a Tu author, means like he's like that poet who ignores classical precedents in his writing. Being ignorant of classical precedents is one of Dogen's favorite insults, the footnote says. I love it. It's pretty good, you know. You gotta like, you can picture, as you get to know Dogen through his writings, right? He often has a bone to pick. But, sometimes what he's really criticizing is just like, these people's literary talents are lame, you know? They compose poetry out of meter, you know. It's not such a bad insult, right? Things can be worse. But Dogen's quite literary, right? We can tell. So some so-called stupid illiterates say, once the breast is without concerns, the concentrated effort at seated meditation, zazen, is a state of peace and calm. This view does not compare with that of the Hinayana scholastics. It's inferior even to the vehicles of men and gods. How could one who holds such a view be called a person who studies the teaching of the Buddha? At present, there are many such practitioners in Great Song, China. How sad that the path of the ancestors has become overgrown. So often when Dogen's kind of critiquing other views, he says something that sounds like, we hear it and think, well, that sounds not so bad. Once the heart is without concerns, then the concentrated effort of Zazen is a state of peace and calm. Sounds pretty good to me. So it's always something a little subtle. It's just this accurate acupuncture needle. What do you think is the problem here with that stupid illiterate view? Another translation of this passage. These people say, practice Zazen and do not be concerned with anything else in your mind. This is the tranquil state of enlightenment. And maybe kind of emphasizes a little bit more. The tranquil state of enlightenment is the most important end result. Yeah, that could be in there, because we are going to get into the goal issue soon. We could also hear it as the kind of apathetic, kind of like, it's kind of a blank thousand. You know, don't be concerned with anything at all. Or, something about no concern, another translation. In the effort of Zazen, to attain peace of mind is everything. Just this is the state of tranquility. That sounds more like the goal-oriented, a hint at the goal orientation. Cause says, the endeavor of Zazen is completed when your heart is quiescent, as Zazen is a place of calmness.
That's
only
Zazen, very short.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just merely being calm, right? What do we say? Mindfulness-based stress reduction. Very helpful, very useful, but if we say that's the whole of Buddha's Zazen, we may be selling it short. It's not just a temporary stress reduction. This may come from, it's very similar to one of the instructions of Da Wei, who Dogen tends to actually be very critical of in general, this Chinese Zen teacher, Da Wei. He was the kind of, lived at the same time as Hung Jir, who wrote the poem later here. And anyway, Dogen tends to be critical of him, but he doesn't say this is coming from him, but it's almost the same quote that Da Wei says. If people happen to achieve the state in which the heart is without concerns, they think that this is the ultimate ease and joy. And, almost the same as this translation. And then Da Wei goes on to say, they do not realize it is simply like a stone pressing down grass. I think that's a key, nice connection there, that I think this is why Dogen, another aspect of why Dogen would criticize this, that you can, in Zazen, you can get very calm and peaceful just by being really present and relaxed. All the conditions are just right. In Sesshin, we can get really settled. But this could be like, pressing down grass, particularly like crab grass. Like a weedy kind of grass that you're actually trying to maybe eradicate or, tame this wild grass. You press it down with a stone, big stone maybe, right? Like it won't grow anymore. We've got rid of that crabgrass. We didn't. It was so easy too. We didn't have to root it out. But as you know, if you've ever tried that, you know, even like long time later, you can pull off the rock. The grass is growing just fine underneath. Pops right back up. So the Zazen approach of pressing down the grass with a rock, like just calm down your mind right here, using whatever technique you can. It's very still, but as soon as you get out, as soon as you leave the Zendo, your crazy mind, your monkey mind will pop right back up. One time I met a Korean Zen teacher, and he was kind of testing my understanding of Zazen, and I felt quite intimidated. And he was doing this in Korean through a translator, and so what's your Zazen practice like? And like I wasn't expecting it to be, you know, like, well, you know, just I understand Zazen to be like just let go of thought. Thought arises and let go of thought. Not bad, right? And he says, well, yeah, but then what about the next thought? And he keeps just letting go of the thought again, and it keeps coming up and let it go, and endlessly practice when a thought arises, let it go. And he, this is kind of a fierce character, Zen master type. And he kind of scowled at me and said in Korean, apparently, said, that's like pressing down grass with a rock. I shriveled up and skulked away to contemplate how I might practice Zazen in such a case. I think all these, you know, they're not completely contradictory. I think we have this wonderful teaching of opening the hand of thought. That's kind of like letting go of thought, letting go of grasping thought. And I think that Uchiyama Roshi would say that that's his understanding of think of not thinking. I think he can probably find that. I think he talks about this story, yeah, and opening the hand of thought. Yeah. I think he would call that non-thinking.
He also equates that with dropping body and mind.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Opening the hand of thought. Is non-thinking and dropping off body and mind. Yeah, so even then we have to see, is the opening the hand of thought that we're practicing like pressing down grass with a rock? Or like, as his teacher pushed a little bit, well, what about when the next thought arises? And yeah, just do it endlessly. And he might even say something like, well, how can you be free like that? You're just endlessly doing this work of like, letting go and letting go and letting go. That doesn't sound like the Buddha wasn't like sitting there saying, oh, I gotta let go again. Oh my, grasping, I gotta let go. Something was like grasping no longer arose for the Buddha. So we could say that opening the hand of thought is not like a kind of intentional and slightly effortful practice. In the end, it might be that practice to realize that the hand of thought is open. I don't know if Uchiyama Roshi ever goes there, but we practice opening the hand of thought. It means like release our grip on the belief that what I think is true. And then if we do that enough, then maybe at some point we realize, oh, actually, like, I keep doing this, but what's actually, maybe there's actually nothing in there. Maybe it's just a reflex. And even like this, maybe actually the hand of thought is actually open and it just appears to be closed. I think something like that. Yes.
So, when you say the hand is open, or body and mind is dropping, do you think that's what the Korean Zen master was getting at?
I think so.
Okay.
process with my thinking.
Of not continuing, letting go.
I think it's like, and you know, yeah. And it's like an insight. And then you can keep doing the practice based on the insight that actually we know on some deep level, we know that actually we're not, that this struggle that we're going through of continuously having to do this practice of opening the hand of thought is just part of the display. It's part of the emanations of the reflections in the mirror. It's part of the manifestation of Buddha nature. But really, you know, this and this, you know, from the perspective of the mirror or the sun or Buddha nature, this and this, not so different really, right? It's just sometimes it appears like this and sometimes like this. You know, that's how I would understand. And I think the same principle is going to come up around a little bit later here about, do you, you know, strike the ox or strike the cart? I think it's kind of a similar principle when we get to it. So this is one view that doesn't compare with the Hinayana scholastics, or, you know, lesser vehicle, very pragmatic approach. We're studying the Pali Canon this year. Did we say it's is that a Hinayana teaching? Can we study it with Mahayana mind without grasping the words as in this very literal kind of sense? It's inferior to vehicles of humans and devas. How could one who holds such a view be called one who studies Buddha's teaching? So he's Dogen. He's on a rant now. Then there's another type which holds that to pursue the way through seated meditation is a function essential for the beginner's mind and the late student, but it's not necessarily an observance of the Buddhas and ancestors. Walking is Zen, sitting is Zen, whether in speech or silent, motion or rest, the substance or the essence is at ease. Therefore, they say, do not adhere solely to the present concentrated effort of seated meditation. In other words, once you realize this essential function, then you no longer need to do this, like, put your butt on the cushion, do like a painful sesshin, because you realize that this and this are the same, right? It's all like, everything is it, speaking, walking, eating, sitting, standing. Therefore, zazen's just another one of the things to do. So again, we hear that and it's like, well, yeah, isn't that so? In fact, he's quoting Yongjia's Song of Awakening. This is famous Zen poem that I think Dogen would praise. Nobody criticizes that. He's a disciple of the sixth ancestor. The poem says something like, whether in speech or silence, motion or rest, the substance. Oh, it actually says walking is Zen, sitting is Zen, and so on in this poem. So kind of emphasizing that wide inclusion of every activity as Zen. So again, Dogen's criticisms are often not really obvious, blatant things. You know, we say, well, that's true, right? But I think he's saying to use that as an excuse and be like, well, you know, when I was a beginner, I needed to sit a lot of zazen to understand that, but now I get it, so now I just like, anything goes, right? I think that's, so we don't need to practice sitting meditation because, you know, for one thing, it's uncomfortable. For another thing, it's boring. For a third thing, it's useless. We could go on and on. But if we make Zen like, you know, our, you know, I don't know, our business dealings or something was very productive, we just call that Zen, then we're accomplishing something at the same time. It's true, it is Zen, but are we using it as an excuse? All right, let's see what the translation. Others insist that the practice of Zazen is important for beginners, but not necessarily the practice for Buddhas and ancestors. Walking is Zen, sitting is Zen. Do not be concerned with the present practice of Zazen. So, this view is common among those calling themselves a branch of the Lin Ji lineage. It's because of a deficiency in the transmission of the orthodox lineage of the teaching of the Buddha that they say this. What is beginner's mind? Actually, this is the phrase that Suzuki Roshi used for Zen mind, right? Maybe even possibly thinking of this fascicle of Dogen. It's the same characters. Beginner's mind. What is beginner's mind? Where is there no beginner's mind? Where do we leave beginner's mind? I think that's what Suzuki Roshi's intention in saying Zen mind is beginner's mind. In the beginner's mind, there's many possibilities. In the expert mind, there's few. So he's saying, well, I'm done with that. Maybe that's another way to see to see his critique here. Is like, you know, with beginner's mind, I really like loved Zazen and it was really great. And now with my expert mind, I've heard again and again that everything is Zen. So like, I'm over that beginner's practice of sitting. So we're kind of like, where in the expert's mind, there's few possibilities, right? Like we got kind of an idea about Zen, and so we don't need to actually put the bottom on the cushion. Dogen, I mean, as you probably know, Dogen was like Zazen freak. He just loved Zazen, and he seemed like he was this greatly realized person, but he sat Zazen all the time. In the spirit of, I think, what we're going to see in this fascicle. Not to get something, not to lose something, not to prove anything, not to be a Buddha, but just sitting, Zazen, expressing the Buddha's function endlessly. Endlessly, there's no end to this. Be it known that for studying the way, the established means of investigation is pursuit of the way in seated meditation. I think this is Bendo Zazen, pursuit of the way, a wholehearted engagement in the way. Yeah, Zazen Bendo. The essential point that marks this investigation, again, Sankyu, this, you know, thorough investigation, penetrating study of Zazen that Dogen emphasizes. The established means for this thorough investigation is the wholehearted way of Zazen. The essential point that marks this investigation is the understanding that there is a practice of a Buddha that does not seek to make a Buddha. Since the practice of a Buddha is not to make a Buddha, it is the realization of the koan, or Genjo Koan. The practice of a Buddha is not to make a Buddha, because that would be kind of silly, right? For like, if Shakyamuni Buddha, okay, I'm going to practice now. Let's make a Buddha here. Let's become a Buddha. Maybe Ananda would come up and say, excuse me, Venerable One, you're already a Buddha. There is a practice of a Buddha that does not seek to make some other Buddha. Since the practice of a Buddha is not to make a Buddha, it is the realization of the koan, or it is the actualization of the fundamental point, the manifestation of the fundamental point. Genjo koan, an important term for Dogen. That Genjo koan here is the practice of a Buddha, which is not making a Buddha. That's Genjo koan. The embodied Buddha does not make a Buddha. When the baskets and cages are broken, a seated Buddha does not interfere with making a Buddha. A sitting Buddha, a Zabutsu, does not interfere with making a Buddha. At just such a time, from 1,000, from 10,000 ages past, from the very beginning, we have the power to enter into Buddha and enter into Mara. Walking forward or back, its measure fills the ditches and moats. So this is going to be the theme for this next section about that he's setting us up here for, about the practice of a Buddha that doesn't seek to make a Buddha. And the sitting Buddha does not interfere with making a Buddha when the baskets and cages are broken. We could say the baskets that are like, we put all our ideas in this basket. It's the nice, like, we say, like, you know, don't put me in a box. My partner Shoho likes to say that to me. Don't put me in a box. Don't have this limited idea of me. When the basket's broken and the cages, even more obvious right there, we're trapped in this cage of our ideas. When the baskets, boxes, and cages are broken open, then a seated Buddha, sitting Buddha, does not interfere with making a Buddha. So the little thing here about, like, well, maybe there is a making of a Buddha, but if there is, the seated Buddha doesn't interfere with that. From 1,000, 10,000 ages, we have the power to enter into Buddha and enter into Mara. So, you know, Mara is like the evil one, the devil, the Buddhist devil, the opposite of Buddha. So, when we're free from these baskets and cages, we can be very intimate with Buddha and very intimate with the devil. Walking forward or back, its measure fills ditches and moats. Which may come from this phrase in the footnote. I think this is a nice, worth repeating. This I think Zen saying, when we vainly expend concentrated effort, we build a cart to fit the ruts. That's a great image, huh? We build a cart to fit the ruts. So there's like, in our practice, we see, we're like, yeah, I think I get what this practice is about and Zazen about. It's like these ruts in the mud here. Just follow that and like, and now how am I going to do it? Well, there's the ruts. They may not be right or not, but that's what I know. That's what a rut is, right? Very familiar, habitual, karmic rut. We see the ruts, and then we fit our practice. It's like building our practice cart to fit the ruts in the road. It's a great image. It's like we have an idea of how we want to practice, so we keep going along, even in practice, in our karmic ruts. We fit our practice into our idea, habitual idea of it. as opposed, so the saying goes, when we vainly expend concentrated effort, it's like we're making this big effort, but actually we're just stuck in the rut. We build a cart to fit the ruts. When we're fundamentally without any skill, it fills the moats and ditches. Or like the so instead of like building the track to fit in this little rut in the moat in the road, we in this free flowing way, the water of practice that doesn't have any dimensions like a cart, it just flows everywhere and it overflows not only the ruts in the road, but it flows over like big ditches and moats, and everything is just like, you know, underwater, all washed clean and unfindable tracks, something like that. Okay, I'll just introduce the story that we'll start on. But now this is the center of kind of long exposition of this next story. Dogen's going to comment on bit by bit, but I'll give you the extended version. And it's maybe a little slightly different translation. So this is about Nanyue and Matsu. Nanyue's disciple of the sixth ancestor, and Matsu is his disciple. So I guess Matsu and Yaoshan, who said think of not thinking, maybe lived at the same time. I don't know if exactly they overlap, but they're almost the same generation of Chinese ancestors. These kind of discussions were very alive in China in this time, the 700s in China. So there was this, in this, so this is, this we'll comment on this later, but in this original story from these records, there's a novice monk called Matsu Dao Yi, one of the great Zen ancestors. So note that in this version of the story, he's a novice monk, just starting practice maybe, who constantly practiced Zen meditation upon Mount Hung. Nanyue, his teacher, knew that Dao Yi was a great vessel for the Dharma, and once walked up to him and said, "What does your worthiness intend to do by sitting in meditation?" Or our translation says, "What are you figuring to do by practicing Zazen?" Figuring, intending, or aiming are all translations of this particular Chinese character that also means like a diagram or a figure of something. So literally like figuring, but it can mean like, what kind of, I think Dogen plays with this. What kind of a figure are you making sitting here in Zazen? Or in this case, what do you intend or aim to do by Zazen? Matsu says, "I intend to become a Buddha," or "I'm figuring to make a Buddha. I'm aiming for a Buddha." Nanyue then picked up a piece of tile from the ground, which apparently there's lots of old broken pieces of stone roof tiles around these Chinese temples, and he began grinding it on a rock. We don't know exactly what he was doing, but picked it up and maybe took another rock and started rubbing it together, or maybe took a cloth and started like polishing it. Dao Yi said, Matsu, who's sitting zazen, looked up from his seat and said, "What are you trying to make by grinding that or polishing that tile?" Nanyue said, "I'm grinding or polishing it to make a mirror." Matsu said, "Well, how? How can you make a mirror by polishing a tile?" Nanyue said, "Well, if you can't make a mirror by polishing a tile, how can you become a Buddha by sitting zazen?" That's his lesson. We could say that the rough tile is like our karmic body and mind. We feel to be very rough around the edges, maybe brittle, easily broken, and not very far from reflecting things like a mirror. Not even close. We're talking about like a rough, dirty tile from the ground, broken, and with sharp edges, and maybe even bugs crawling on it. How are we going to like polish this karmic body and mind into a Buddha mirror that reflects by sitting zazen? So that's the heart of the beginning of the story. And then Matsu is kind of open to this, like, maybe my approach is off track. So he says, "Well, what's the correct way?" And Nanyue says, "It's like, it can be compared to an ox pulling a cart. If the cart doesn't move, do you strike the cart or strike the ox?" This is often, most commentators agree, the ox and the cart. Actually, there's a footnote we'll get into in that section, but like body and mind. In other words, he's sitting Zen. He's doing zazen. He's sitting Zen. How can by this posture of sitting can you make a Buddha? And now the new metaphor now is, if the cart doesn't move, do you strike the cart, which is like the body? Do you try to like get your posture just right? We do emphasize posture quite a bit, right? Or do you strike the mind that understands what's going on here? The ox that pulls the cart. The mind that's the source of this body. It's one way to hear it. Do you strike the cart or strike the ox? Matsu didn't answer. Nanyue then said, "Are you sitting in order to practice Zen, or are you sitting to be a Buddha? If you're sitting Zen," I think it's literally, "if you're zazen, then you know that Zen is not a matter of sitting or lying down," which Dogen quotes in the Fukan Zazengi. "It's not about posture, and yet it manifests in a posture, yeah? If you're sitting to be a Buddha, or you're sitting Buddha, then know that Buddha has no fixed form. With respect to the constantly changing world, you should neither grasp it nor reject it." Or another translation, in the non-abiding Dharma, there should be no grasping or rejecting. Or there can be no grasping or rejecting in a non-abiding Dharma. If you sit to become a Buddha, you kill Buddha. If you grasp sitting form, then you've not reached the meaning. So that's the story that Dogen will go through in great detail. But the story goes on, the original story goes on. When Dao Yi heard this instruction, it was as though he had drunk sweet nectar. We say sweet dew is a Chinese way of saying amrita, the fruit of the gods. He bowed and asked, "How can one..." So he had this kind of insight. He heard that teaching like drinking sweet nectar. But he still wants to, now he really wants to explore this more fully. He said, how can one cultivate mind to be in accord with formless samadhi? The formless samadhi that doesn't rely on any particular form. This part's not in, Dogen doesn't comment on this part. Nanyue said, you're studying the Dharma gate. You are studying the Dharma gate of mind ground, the source of mind, and this activity is like planting seeds there. I think this activity may refer to Zazen. You're studying the Dharma gate of the mind ground, and this activity, your Zazen practice, is like planting seeds there. The essential Dharma of which I speak is like the rain that falls upon the seeded ground. So you've already been practicing Zazen a lot, so when I pointed out about the tile, the mirror, the cart, and the ox, you were really like, the seeds were already planted. So that was just a little bit of water on them, and that's, they sprouted into sweet dew taste. In the same manner, your auspicious karmic conditions will allow you to perceive the way. So it's a little bit like teacher and disciple working together here. Matsu then asked, the way is without color or form. How can one perceive it? Nanyue said, the Dharma eye of mind ground can perceive the true way. The formless samadhi is likewise perceived. The Dharma eye of the mind ground we were talking this morning about as the, like the mirror or the sun, the ground, the source from which all reflections arise and from which the earth is illuminated by the sun. So the Dharma eye of the mind ground can perceive the true way. You know, your thinking maybe can't, but the Dharma eye of the Genzo, you know, the Bogen, the Hogen, can perceive the true way. Matsu said, does it have good or bad or not? Or another translation, maybe a different text says, does it have arising and ceasing or not? The formless samadhi or the mind ground. Nanyue said, if the way is seen in the aggregation and disintegration of good and bad, then it's not the way. If the way has this arising and ceasing, good and bad, and all this duality, it's not the way. Listen to this verse. The mind ground fully sown with seeds. When moisture comes, all the seeds sprout. The formless flower of samadhi, how can it be arising or ceasing? At these words, Matsu experienced great awakening and unsurpassed realization. He then served Nanyue for 10 years, each day embodying the deep mystery. So, Dogen never mentions the second half of this story. The first was like tasting ambrosia, but then he, as they conversed a little bit more about about the dependent co-arising of themselves, about the intimacy of inquiry and response arising together, then he, everything dropped away for Matsu. Anything you'd like to bring up about think of not thinking or about our first look into this story? Or about how to practice the rest of the day? Maybe some of you are practicing following the breath, counting the breath. Very good practice for returning to the present when the mind wanders off because the breath that we're following is not the past breath or the future breath. That's why it's so nice to follow it, because it's always here and now. And if that's your practice and you want to play with this these teachings a little bit at the same time, one could be attending to the breath as a somewhat external to mind. The breath is the object of meditation, we say, following the breath with the mind. And then while following the breath, without getting distracted about some other thing, may be possible, especially if you're really with the breath, really present, really intimate with the breath, may be possible to trace back the radiance that's aware of the breath, the awareness that's directed towards the breath, to see, to shine back, basically ask, another way to say this is ask, who is following the breath here? That's the question, and as you know, that's also the answer. Who is following the breath? But it's a particular little shift, you know, to like, there's, in other words, the breath is reflected in the mirror, and we're carefully attending to the present breath, and then it's like this, it's taking a step back and like to kind of tune into the mirror that's actually the awareness of the breath. There's a mind that's not thinking, that's that can think of the breath and can attend to the breath. And we can attend to the breath, and we can attend to the mind that's attending to the breath. Yeah. Does that make sense? It might sound like kind of funny, but it's a slight shift. Maybe not that big a shift from actually just following the breath. And maybe quite subtle, so, and we might start thinking about it a lot and then totally lose the present moment, trying to remember the past instruction or something. So, but it's possible practice. Like, as I mentioned, at one point, we feel like we're the host of our own talk show, and we're in charge of this show. We can invite any guests we want, and we like entertainment, so we invite often very rowdy guests to our talk show. Sometimes they really push us because we have to say, I'm the host here, you know. So like, we have time limits, and you know, we're like, we have a commercial coming, so, and there's certain things you can't say on the air, so stop it! You know, we're trying to control these rowdy guests on our talk show, and we feel very strongly as if we're the host. But then in Sesshin we might say, well, you know, like, it's been a exciting week of episodes, but just, you know, for today, let's just take a break and invite a really calm, well-mannered guest. Let's invite the breath to be our guest today. Have a seat, breath. That's right there. What would you like to say? Oh, you don't have as much to say as the other guests. Oh, I feel so relaxed. I'm not even trying to control you. and I'm just enjoying being here with you. Breath. I'm just, in fact, I feel so relaxed that I don't have to make this huge effort to, like, be the host. It's like we're just kind of doing the show together here. In fact, we might start to wonder, now that we're so relaxed here, I think I'm starting to wonder, am I really the host of this show? I mean, I'm so busy trying to play my role as the host, but actually, I wonder if I really am. Wait a second. Wait, look back. Learn the backward look. We look up and we see the big mirror. The big mirror. And oh, I all along, and I was like trying to do my job of being the little host down here. You were really hosting the show, mirror mine. And now that that my special guest today is so well mannered, I feel so relaxed. Now, you know, when those rowdy, obnoxious guests were on the show, I didn't have a chance to look at you because I was trying to keep it all in line here. Keep those guests in line and try to control, be the host. But now, since I don't have to do much as the little host down here, I'll let you, mirror, be the host. You're hosting me, who I thought I was the host. You're actually hosting me and our special guest, the breath. Can you kind of picture this show? You're hosting both of us. So there's me hanging out with the breath down here, and there's this mirror that's actually the true host. And then then something happens, like the bell rings and it's time for karaoke. And it's like, okay, I'll see you later, mirror. I'll catch up with you next Zazen period. Right now, I gotta do the next thing. What is it? I gotta serve. No, the second bowl comes before the first. No, the first comes before the second. Meanwhile, the true host is kind of like, have fun. It was nice, just communing with you, and I'm still communing with you, but you might have to have some more rowdy episodes before you can have a special guest like that breath again. It's a weird story.
It's a weird show.
It's a very weird show. And, you know, often there's just, you know, it plays all these old reruns. You'd think they'd have a new season with some, like, fresh episodes. And sometimes there are, but, this one, I've seen this rerun, 10 times already. It's a rowdy guest, and it's a rerun. Oh, man. I wouldn't mind a rerun of The Breath. That episode was my favorite. Okay. You can choose your channel the next period. May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable. I vow to become it.